Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 221 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me is a very tired, a very lethargic Spencer Lafferman.
Hi.
He's been up since 8 a.m. yesterday, and it is...
P.M.
Oh, P.M.?
Yes.
God. 8 p.m. yesterday, and it is now 3:27, so that's math.
8 a.m. would have... I probably might be dead.
That's what I thought you said. I was like, Jesus, 8 a.m.? That's like...
I mean, it's still 8 p.m. still quite a bit.
No, that's still quite a bit. That's almost 24 hours.
Yeah.
So this episode should be quite fun. We're talking about The Blob today. The 80s remake, in case you didn't know it was a remake, because I didn't for the longest time. Just like John Carpenter's The Thing. Some people don't know that that's a remake. Even The Fly is a remake, which is funny because I feel like remakes weren't like really more popularized until later. But yeah, there's definitely like the 80s had some really solid remakes.
Well, then again, a lot of people, I don't quite remember if the original Blob was in color, but
I don't believe.
But I know if the thing, the original thing was black and white and stuff, and people tend to forget. You know, black and white was more in, like, you know, the 40s, 50s, early 60s, so a lot of people tend to forget that, especially when the remakes are so damn good. Like, it's almost like they're so good you forget that there was one before it.
One before it, yeah. It does appear that the 1958 Blob was in color. And the John Carpenter's The Thing was based off of The Thing from Another World or something like that. That was the remake. It had a different name, and John Carpenter was like, fuck all those extra words. The Thing.
Right, it's just The Thing.
The Thing. Yeah, so it's exciting. I was going to try to overdo it today and watch the original Blob, because it's actually streaming. Handstand. I think it's on Max. Let me double check here. The Blob, 1958. It is on... Oh, it's on Tubi. Okay. I was going to try to watch it, but I didn't have time today. I barely made it in time watching the 80s one. One of these days, I'll watch the original.
I don't know if I've... Like, I want to say I have watched the original, but if I have, it was, like, one time when I watched this for the first time, and that was probably 15 years ago, so I don't really remember it.
Yeah, and, original one has a 3.1, and the remake, and this one we're talking about, has a much higher rating. It's how you do remakes. This is a prime example of how you do remakes. 80s was really good with remakes.
Well, then again, a lot of people, casual movie watchers cannot necessarily appreciate the craft of the originality of, like, you know, the original Blob or whatever, which I mean, a 3.1 for that movie is not bad, obviously, but, like,
yeah,
most
assuming.
People probably, like you and I probably, I mean, we know now, but, like, beforehand, they probably just think this was the first one and called it a day.
Right, yeah.
Because a lot of people aren't going to want to go into extra research, and, I mean, honestly, unless you, like, go to IMDb or certain pages that will let you know specifically that it's a remake, you're not going to know.
Exactly, yeah. This is, in fact, a remake, and I'm sure probably the, I assume, like I said, I haven't seen it. I assume probably the biggest issues was probably something to do with, like, the special effects, you know. It was the 50s. I can't imagine they're, like, amazing, but I'm sure they probably are still pretty solid.
You know, rewatching this, though, I had a thought that would be a great double feature is this and The Stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because they both kind of have that
goopy creature.
I mean, I didn't really want to say exactly what it was. Like, I mean, not because spoilers. I was just trying to think of something, like, more clever to say. But yes,
yeah,
they both have to do with some weird goopy thing that doesn't even make sense that happens.
Yeah, that would be a really good double feature: The Stuff and The Blob. That was directed by Larry Cohen. Great fucking movie. Yeah, I haven't seen that one in a long time. Actually, I might watch that tonight now.
It's a good one.
Oh, I have to own The Stuff.
I'm sure you do.
I think it's an Arrow, I'm pretty sure. Oh, yeah, there it is right there. Yeah, it's on the end. Yeah.
Yeah. I know I was going to say, if you don't have it, I have it digitally.
Someone's
so.
Got it. So The Blob, 1988, we'll get there eventually. I've got some horror news. I'm excited to talk about The Blob. I really, really had a lot of fun with it on this go. Not that I didn't before, but... Just watching it. This is only my second time watching it. So, and I wish the 4K would have already been released from Scream Factory. It doesn't come out till next month, but I'll have to watch it again. And this is actually one that when I was watching today, I was like, you know what? I'm really excited for the 4K. Cause not like this copy was bad, but it could definitely use some improvement, especially you know, like with the pink hues and like all the bright colors. I think that's going to fucking pop when that 4K comes out. So starting up number one here, it is the year of things returning to theaters because House of a Thousand Corpses is going to celebrate its 20th anniversary in theaters. Which I couldn't even fucking believe. I was like, it's been 20 years? It's been 84 years. Yeah, 20 fucking years. Jeez. House of a Thousand... Zombie's been a busy man over the past 2 decades, so much so that it's almost easy to forget what a hard time he had getting Corpses into theaters back in 2003. If you know anything about this, pretty much after the movie was done and completed and he screened it, Universal was like, yeah, we're not putting this out at all. And they backed down from distributing it. And then they fucking did a haunted house on it or whatever. So I'm like, what the fuck? They did it at HHN. They did I'm pretty sure it was a house before it was a movie. I don't know. So they eventually Lionsgate stepped up to play. All hail Lionsgate. We love Lionsgate here at Framers Podcast. Lionsgate is the fucking goat.
Honestly, anything horror Lionsgate is like, let's do it.
Yeah, if I go into a horror movie and I don't know, I see Lionsgate, I'm like, oh, this is gonna be great. I already know.
I mean, even if they don't produce it, like any A24 movie is distributed by Lionsgate, regardless if it's horror or not. So like Lionsgate has just got their hands in like all the gold.
Yeah. If I go to a movie and I see Lionsgate followed by A24, just shoot me. It's done. I can't handle it. In addition to a brand new physical media release, House of a Thousand Corpses is also getting a second run in theaters thanks to the folks at Fathom Events, who will put the film back on the big screen next month as part of their annual Fright Fest lineup. This news comes to us from Bloody Disgusting. Again, I get all my stuff from Fangoria, who note that the screenings will take place on Sunday, October 8th at 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. local time, and Wednesday, October 11th at 7 p.m. local time. So next month, it's going to be pretty awesome for things coming back to theaters. I mean, shit, John Carpenter had 2 movies come back to theaters. This is coming back to theaters. Terrifier 2 is coming back to theaters. Like, it's fucking awesome. I'm not a fan. I know you're like me. We saw 3 from Hell as a Fathom event, and it's like, it's just not the same. The surround sound's not nearly as good. It's like the quality is always very low.
And that's because it's just recorded. It's just recorded.
It's a satellite thing. I don't know. So,
it's all just recorded. But I mean, to see something on the big screen that you've never seen on the big screen before is enough to like go.
Yeah, well, that's why I went and saw Terrifier, because I never got that. I don't even think that actually ever got a theatrical run.
The first one's coming back to theaters.
Yeah, I already saw it.
It already came back.
Yeah,
my bad.
It came back in July, and
I was gonna say it came back. Yeah,
it was great, but it was definitely a case of I wish the surround sound was better. It was very low, and I was like, the intense scenes aren't hitting the same because it's not like it didn't like the surround sound wasn't very like.
Well, I mean. Even on the Blu-ray, the surround sound isn't fantastic. It's just because of the money and everything. Like, it definitely shows its budget.
Oh, yeah.
Which is not a bad thing, but like...
It was still fun to see on the screen.
Like, for instance, Terrifier 2 on Blu-ray and or 4K, it's weird because they both actually look 100% the same.
Really?
Yeah. And if you go to Blu-ray.com, it's the exact same rating for the 4K and Blu-ray. It's just a 4 out of 5 for both.
Weird.
Like,
okay.
Walmart's actually re-releasing another Steelbook, but in 4K this time.
Yeah,
with
I saw
new
that.
New artwork, new special features, which is cool. And I was thinking about the upgrade.
I know. I already have the Blu-ray Steelbook, and I'm like,
But if there's not much, like, to... Give me a reason to upgrade it. Like, if the picture... I mean, I'm sure some of the brightness and stuff will look better.
Oh, yeah.
But also, I'm sure it's not that huge of a difference because it's also the low-quality budget of it all. So, like, to me, that's not really a required double dip.
I think Terrifier 3 is going to look, obviously, the best because they got, like, $12 million from Terrifier 2. Budget's going to be fucking massive.
I mean, but then again, maybe it'll look the same because that's what he's going for, and he's just going to put the budget to...
Oh, I've seen the camera he got. It's fucking insane.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I saw him post on Instagram. I was like, that looks like a spaceship. I was like, holy shit.
Oh, okay then.
Yeah, so I think Terrifier 3 is going to be insane. So for those of you who somehow remain oblivious to the adventures, I love how this fucking article is like calling people out like you oblivious bitch, to the adventures of Captain Spaulding, Otis and Baby over the 3 films in which they have appeared. House of a Thousand Corpses is something of a Texas Chainsaw riff, a Texas Chainsaw Massacre riff. In the film, a quartet of youngsters runs afoul of a very fucked up family living in the titular corpse house. It's a completely different beast than the other sequels that follow the Devil's Rejects and 3 from Hell. one that leans a bit harder into the goofiness of zombie sensibility as an artist. If you've never seen it, catching it on the big screen is almost certainly the way to go. So check that out next month in October. October 8th and October 11th, 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. and then 7 p.m. So, boom. Next up here, if you're a fan of Hell House LLG, what is that? LLC. That's a different movie.
And I'm the tired one.
Right? You're the one that's been up for so long. We're getting a new movie called Hell House LLC Origins, the Carmichael Manor. It's been almost a year since we first got wind of a new entry in this franchise, but today Shudder has blessed us with an official trailer, poster, and release date for writer-director Stephen Cognetti's Hell House LLC Origins, The Carmichael Manor. So if you remember the first one back in 2015, it all kicked off the franchise, which we were introduced to the, you know, Abaddon Hotel. And then there's two sequels that followed, Hell House LLC 2, The Abaddon Hotel, and then Hell House LLC 3, Lake of Fire, arguably the worst in the series, in my opinion. I liked 2. It was a little over the top, but it was fun. I don't know. Hell House LLC 3 just took a completely weird turn. So the story takes place in 2021 and follows a group of internet sleuths who travel to the remote Carmichael Manor, located deep in the woods of Rockland County, New York. The estate is the site of the infamous 1989 Carmichael family murders that have gone unsolved to this day. What they discover are secrets that have been hidden away for decades and a terror that has been lurking in the shadows long before Hell House. This is actually not a prequel or a sequel to the original trilogy. This is a standalone movie, which is good because I feel like sometimes if you make so many sequels and prequels, like, the story can just get kind of convoluted.
Yeah.
So this is a completely separate entry. It's just taking place in the same franchise. I'm excited for this. Hell House LLC is one of my favorite. The first one, at least, is one of my favorite, like, found footage movies. I know we showed this at one of my Halloween parties. Do you remember that one?
I've only seen the first one.
Yeah, we showed it at, like, the first Halloween party we did when we were at the townhome.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it before we did that, but, like, no, sorry, it was a rewatch, but I've only seen the first one.
Yeah, well, that's fine. You don't really need to see. You don't have to see 2 and 3. They're not required viewings. So the fourth movie in the franchise will debut as an official selection at the 14th annual Telluride Horror Show from October 13th to 15th with Q&A from Cognetti after each showing. Hell House LLC Origins, The Carmichael Manor will then make its exclusive streaming debut on Shudder on October 30th, just in time for Halloween, which is amazing. There's still a lot of shit coming out for the rest of the year, streaming and theatrically. That Caitlin Dever movie that went straight to...
Yeah, it's on Hulu now.
No One Lives, You Don't Get Out. The fuck is it called?
I forgot.
No One Will Save You. There we go. And currently sitting at a 3.4 right now, which is pretty awesome. Came out today, which we've talked about that multiple times on the show. I think me and Gabby are going to try to watch that because it is a sci-fi horror thriller and only 93 minutes. So I love a good 90-minute movie. Plus Caitlin Dever in like a horror movie. Okay.
Yeah, she's a very... good actress. I first discovered her as an actress in the show Justified, and I've pretty much been in love with her ever since.
I did not know she was in Justified.
Yeah, she's yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if she's done anything beforehand, but where I first saw her.
Well, let's see, because she was on a show called Last Man Standing with Tim Allen, which I frequented.
Which could have been around the same time as Justified, because she wasn't on the whole series of Justified. She was in like one full season, and periodically showed up.
Okay.
But yeah.
So Last Man Standing started in 2011 and Justified was 2010. So yeah, around the same
time.
Okay,
so yeah, around the same time.
I didn't even know she was in that. So yeah, she's great, and she's also in Booksmart, which is fucking hilarious comedy. Essentially Superbad, but with chicks.
Yeah. It's a female version of Superbad.
It's pretty much, yeah, and I'm okay with that. It was great. So she's very talented, and anytime I see her like doing a new movie or show, I'm like, yes, going to see this, because... She will draw me to a movie because I just think she's a great actress. So Chucky is falling victim to that stupid shit where they split seasons into two. What is the deal with that?
So usually do that when it's the last season.
Right.
Or it's a bigger season, like more episodes. So the first two seasons are only six episodes, eight episodes.
There's not many.
I believe there's eight. Yes, yeah, there's eight because I'm thinking on the Blu-ray, there's four on each disc. There's two discs. That's four plus four is eight.
There's 6 hours, so.
Yeah, like 6.5 hours. So, yeah, so each one's got. So this one could have more episodes, and, you know, maybe they're, like, they paid for a certain amount, like, for this, and then later on. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is the last season, because I actually just finished the second season a couple weeks ago, and it was not very good at all.
Really?
I was actually pretty bored and just waiting for it to be over.
Oh, weird.
So, compared to the first season, very different. Like, the first season, amazing. The second season was a little bit better than Seed of Chucky, the movie.
Oh.
To put it into perspective that way.
Oh,
I mean, there was parts
man.
Of it I liked, parts I didn't. There was more cons than pros. I loved the first season. I'll definitely watch the third season, but this may be the last because, like I said, split into two.
Go ahead.
I was just going to reiterate, but sometimes it could just be it's going to be a, like, maybe it's going to be 10 episodes instead of eight. So they'll do like four, or they'll do five and five.
Yeah, well, apparently this was an internet rumor for the past week, but now it's been made official that the third season will be split into two, some episodes airing this year, some episodes airing next year. So they're assuming that it's due to the SAG after strikes, which
it could very well
probably
be.
Is why. So fucking pay up, everybody.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, like that's what they're assuming. Like, I don't think it's been confirmed, but they're presuming that's probably the issue.
Which, I mean, makes sense because when the strike started, it was probably like halfway through production.
Right.
So instead of like postponing it fully, they're going to put out part of it. So maybe it is just still going to be the normal eight episodes.
Okay. Well,
we'll find out.
We will find out. So alongside this news, Sci-Fi also released a trailer for Chucky's third season, a trailer that indicates this might be the wildest season of Chucky yet. I mean, they've got Chucky in the White House, for fuck's sake. Here's an official plot synopsis for season three. In Chucky's unending thirst for power, season three now sees Chucky ensconced with the most powerful family in the world, America's first family, inside the infamous walls of the White House. How did Chucky wind up in here? What in God's name does he want? And how can Jake, Devin, and Lexi possibly get to Chucky inside the world's most secure building, all while balancing the pressures of romantic relationships and growing up? Meanwhile, Tiffany faces a looming crisis of her own as the police close in on her. Fucking spoilers!
You wrote this.
I just copied and pasted. I don't read this. I'll just bleep that out, I guess. Fucking spoilers.
I was reading this, and that's some big spoilers.
I really got to preface that. I'll just bleep that out. It's fine. Just
That's a fuck.
Yeah, well, all right. That's spoiled for me now. Fuck. God damn.
Yikes.
Oof. I should probably start proofreading some of this shit. I just copy and paste it from Fangoria. I'm like, which I
get that you want to put certain things out there, but if it's things that you know you haven't even seen yourself, probably like find something. I'm sure there's other horror information you could put on here.
Just for your own sake. Yeah, well, that's fun. I mean, like, it's not like it's gonna ruin the whole season for me. Moving on, Elijah Wood gets a bold new look in the Toxic Avenger.
Dude, he looks so good.
He looks fucking insane.
I love it. Honestly, he looks like
Penguin.
Penguin. Yeah. More so from the show Gotham than the movie.
Yeah, but he looks just like a twisted Danny DeVito from Batman Returns.
Yeah, it's awesome.
This morning, Entertainment Weekly dropped a bunch of brand new images from Macon Blair's forthcoming The Toxic Avenger remake, offering us our best look yet at one of the most anticipated movies of the year. The Toxic Avenger, which will premiere this Friday, today, at Fantastic Fest in Australia, in Austin, Texas, has been playing its cards very close to the chest, vest, whatever. Beyond a single still that accompanied the announcement of the film's Fantastic Fest debut, we've seen nothing from Blair's film, but the images below indicate he's really swinging for the fences on this one. We've got Mr. Peter Dinklage prior to the devastating accident that will turn him into the titular hero. The tutu ought to be familiar to anyone who's seen the 1984 original. Now, my question is he going to be the same size? I'm just curious, because I think it would be super awesome if he was the same size running around as Toxie. That would be fucking awesome.
I doubt it.
I know. I just thought that would be hilarious.
Only because he's mentioned... I mean, some people will do that, but I know for a fact he won't, because he's mentioned before how he distastes, you know, having a dwarf play a role meant for an adult.
Yeah.
So.
Oh. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Because I know that's why he doesn't do roles like that. Typically, dwarves get typecast in.
Yes.
Yeah. He specifically goes for other, and I fucking commend him for that. That's amazing.
So I mean, if they do, it might be like a CGI type of thing. And you know, maybe he wants to try different roles. I mean, to be fair, this is probably, if you look at his filmography, this is probably his most wildest role he's ever taken.
Oh yeah,
he usually does like drama, like more dialogue driven dramas.
Yeah, dramas, or you know, he did Elf, which he was serious in, but that was a comedy, you know, like.
Yeah, but still, but I mean, that made more sense for his character too. But
yeah, he was a hard ass.
So I'm going to assume no. But maybe
I would not be opposed to it. I think that would be fucking awesome.
And maybe if he does it, it's because he knows it would be more of a fan service, and it won't be more of a derogatory thing towards dwarves. So it could be.
I assume he won't.
It could be more for comedic effect.
Yeah, they're either going to do it for comedic effect or not, because like you know, Toxie from the original, he you know, he's a big kind of burly dude.
Or if anything, maybe they'll just make fun of it. Like at one point, like maybe they'll be like, "I thought you would be bigger," like as a joke. Which I mean, Peter Dinklage can take a joke, so yeah. Like maybe they'll just do that because as a quote unquote fan service, like I just said, the people that know Peter Dinklage and know his stand on what he stands for and stuff like that could just be perfect too.
Yeah. Either way, it doesn't matter. I don't care what they do with it. I'm excited because I don't know. I think it's going to be a good time. And then if you get a look at, I have the pictures here for us, but you can't see. You have to go to Entertainment Weekly.
Oh, suckers.
But yeah, Elijah Wood, he's got like balding hair on the sides.
The most terrifying
so
look.
Creepy.
I don't think I've ever seen him look that creepy, and I've seen him eat people, so I don't. That's creepy.
He looks like Gollum and Penguin and fucking pedophile. He looks like so many things.
Imagine if Gollum and Dan DeVito's Penguin had a baby.
That's exactly what he looks like, because he's got one little patch of hair on the front of his, you know, towards the front of his head.
I wonder if he'll channel like his inner Penguin acting wise.
I mean, I've heard his performance is pretty good, but it's also from people at Fantastic Fest, so they're there, you know, they're all going to probably say good things about it. So I want a true review from someone that, you know, is not impartial to the fact that they're getting to see this for free. We actually had a conversation about this in the Slashers group chat where pretty much I need Doug's review from Slashers and then I'll be happy. But yeah, Danny DeVito. Yes. Danny DeVito. Elijah Wood looks insanely crazy and he's got really good range too. I think he's going to pull off a really crazy whatever he is, because he's not really even the villain. It's Kevin Bacon that's the villain, and he looks insane too, mainly just crazy in the eyes. But he's got a fucking robe on with, I don't know. I didn't even know he was in this.
I didn't either.
Until I was doing this, I was like, holy shit, Bacon's in this? Okay.
I like that Kevin Bacon is, this is like his fourth or fifth horror in the last like couple of years now.
Yeah.
Like, I liked how he's embracing, I wouldn't necessarily say what made him. I feel like Tremors was really horror, but like.
Yeah, Tremors was definitely horror.
Yeah, but that was more, I feel like, on the comedy horror versus Friday the 13th was horror. Like, I like how he's like, you know what?
I'm going back to my roots.
Right? In a way, I don't know if that's how he's thinking, but like, I like that. Like now that his daughter's in horror, he's like, you know, let me keep going.
Let me dip my toe in the pool.
Maybe we'll see his wife in horror, like a horror movie one of these days. Who knows?
Yeah. Wait, I thought they got divorced. Are they still,
they're still married.
Oh, weird. Okay. So Kevin Bacon, Danny DeVito, Peter Dinklage. It's going to be a fun time. No word on like when it's happening, but this is a quote from Blair about the film, and it's Toxic Hero. Quote, "There is a terrible industrial accident that renders him a mutant and an outcast, but also gives him some super strength and super abilities that sets him on a path of being an unlikely vigilante in his downward spiral, in this downward spiraling society. Similar to the original Toxic Avenger, he's singularly unqualified to be a hero. He's not especially brave. He's not especially crafty. But he has his heart in the right place, and he starts taking it to the limit when he's pushed into a corner. Go, Toxie."
Okay, so based on that, I'm going to change my thing and say I'm 100% sure he's just going to stay Peter Dinklage Sykes. Because I feel like this plot would be perfect to honestly his size in real life, so maybe that's also why they picked Peter Dinklage to play him.
Yeah, and the only thing I can find on IMDb is, you know, his character name is Winston. I don't see anybody else credited for, like, Toxic Avenger or...
Like I said, if they do, like, a bodysuit, it'll probably be like mocap, like a little bit of mocap.
Mocap?
Motion capture.
Oh, I was like, what is this? Yeah, I don't see anybody credited as the Toxic Avenger, so...
So, I mean, unless for some reason he really hit the gym and got buff, which would be cool, but I don't know if he did that.
Yeah, I'm assuming that they would just put him in some sort of, you know, makeup or, yeah, like a suit or something like that.
Like a little bodysuit or something, yeah.
Either way, I'm excited for that because, you know, the original one is wild fun time, and there's, like, I think there's 3 total sequels. I think so. I think there's 4 original Toxic Avengers. I've only seen the first one.
I've only seen the first one.
I have not seen the subsequent sequels, although I really do want to get that 4K box set that someone put out where it has all of them in 4K. It was like $90 when I went to buy it, though, and I was like, ooh, maybe I'll wait a little bit.
That's really not horrible.
It's not horrible.
4Ks,
yeah.
Knowing that, like...
In a box set.
I was going to say, because normally, like, one single 4K is like $34, $40 closely, so, like, 4 of those for 40, that's not bad.
I did just order that because I missed out on the Exorcist Steelbook. I was kind of upset because I really wanted it for the art. I went ahead and ordered the Myst 4K Steelbook from Best Buy because I was like, I don't want that.
I was like the Myst 4K. I'm like, I thought you were talking about like an alternative artwork to Exorcist. I'm like,
No. I went ahead and ordered the Myst in 4K Steelbook because I feel like that's probably gonna. I don't know. That's never been released in 4K to my knowledge in America. So I feel like
it's
that's
never been released in 4K ever.
Oh, then there you go. Because the Exorcist, they didn't even have a fucking copy at my Best Buy, and I went to ask them. They're like, yeah, it's sold out online. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
So I just got the regular standard.
Honestly, if you
4K.
Play one, I mean, obviously, you know, I have a lot of Steelbooks.
Oh yeah.
So take it from me. If you 100% know there's going to be a Steelbook before it comes out, pre-order it, because 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get it in stores.
This is actually the first time when I went to Best Buy looking for a Steelbook that they didn't have it or that I couldn't get it online.
Okay, I guess for popular movies then.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I think I also think this might have been the first time that Exorcist was in 4K. Maybe.
Yes,
yeah,
this is the first time. So, yeah, but it's had multiple Steelbook releases, hence I have the Blu-ray Steelbook.
So yeah, so I've learned from my mistakes. I pre-ordered the Myst 4K and another 4K from Best Buy. I was like, I'm just going to do this now so that way it just comes straight to my door.
There are certain ones that you definitely need to
get.
Like anything, if you get anything Marvel or DC, any big names.
Pre-order that shit.
Steelbook, pre-order it almost immediately or it's going to be rough getting it.
I always just forget that things can go like out of print that aren't, you know, boutique labels. I just forget for some reason.
Well,
I'm like, they'll have it.
Well, I mean, most Steelbooks that come to Best Buy are just Best Buy
exclusives, yeah.
Which means they're obviously limited.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, don't get me wrong. After a couple of years, like, I've seen some Steelbooks that I pre-ordered Best Buy have for, like, half of what I paid for. I'm like, fuck.
But, like, son of a bitch.
Yeah, but, like, I didn't know that. And yeah. I'd rather pay the 30 or whatever for it to have a guarantee
than
not have it.
Exactly. So I've learned my lesson. It's fine. Let's get on to the IMDb roundup here. The Blob from 1988. This is also Welcome Back to Scream Factory September.
I have a question, though, before you get into all
this.
Yes. Why do you always put, have we seen this? Because clearly we have. If we're podcasting it, I mean.
I just meant, like, have we seen this before this viewing?
Oh, okay.
Like, was this a first viewing? For me, this was my second.
Oh, okay. Yeah. This was, like, my second or third. Okay.
Yeah, so we both seen this.
Yeah, I see that all the time. I'm like, I mean, kind of had to review it.
Prior to this watch.
Okay.
If that was confusing for anybody else, that may have been. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, our listeners know.
I didn't even think about that. Have we seen this? No.
No, we're just talking out of our ass, and it just happens to be correct.
Have we seen this? That would make more sense if I said, have we seen this prior to? No, yeah, this was my.
So now you should ask whoever's like after me, the next couple of people, ask them if that's been confusing for them.
I'm going to have to now. this is The Blob from 1988, released on August 5th of that year in the U.S. This is rated R for mild sex and nudity, severe violence and gore, mild profanity, mild alcohol, drugs and smoking, and severe frightening and intense scenes. Coming in at a brisk hour and 35 minutes. There is not 1 ounce of downtime in this movie, I swear. Listed as a horror sci-fi thriller directed by Chuck Russell, who also directed A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, The Mask, and Scorpion King 3. wildly different movies.
I mean,
wildly different.
I mean, yes, but like, okay, so take out the Scorpion King, the Blob, the Dream Warriors, and the Mask. They all have some type of,
like, yeah,
body-ish horror to it.
They kind of do, yeah.
In a way, the Scorpion King definitely doesn't. I don't know why that's on their resume. I mean, that's fine. I mean, sure,
it's fine.
I enjoyed the Scorpion King.
It's just what it was.
It's just a weird one to put on that resume because all of his other ones are kind of like can be considered similar in a way.
Yeah, that's true. It's like Dream Warriors, fucking amazing. Mask, amazing. Scorpion King, fun. The Blob,
it's
amazing. Yeah.
Just fun.
So this was written by. So there's two people that are credited with the earlier screenplay, Theodore Simonson and Kay Lineker, who did the screenplay for the original Blob. And then you have Irvin H. Milgate, who's credited for the story by. The original idea of the 1958 Blob. And then you have Chuck Russell, who did the screenplay as well. He also did the screenplay for Dreamscape and A Nightmare 3. Then we have Frank Darabont. Speaking of The Mist from a second ago, he also did the screenplay for this. He also worked on Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, The Fly 2, The Shawshank Redemption, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which we already reviewed last month, so he's come up a lot, The Green Mile, and The Mist.
He also was a part of The Walking Dead.
Yes, he was. Yeah, he's credited for like the original idea or something like that. I went over this on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. I was like, he's credited for every episode of Walking Dead, and he's credited because he was one of the
he created. Honestly, after I think like the first or second season, he walked away.
Yeah, he was done.
Created differences.
Yeah. Produced by four people, two of which stood out to me: Andre Blay, who also produced Prince of Darkness, Brain Damage, They Live, Mosquito, and Village of the Damned, and then Rupert Harvey, who also produced Critters, A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child, Critters 3 through 4, Critters, oh, and Bones, Critters A New Binge, and Critters Attack. That man really likes Critters. I mean, good, that's fine, you know, you found your niche and you're gonna fucking, you know, do it. Composed by Michael Honig, who also composed The Gate, I, Madman, Class of 1999, and Dracula 3000, which was his last credit. What a way to go out.
That's probably why it was his last credit.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, and you're done. Cinematography. Now, this man has done some things. Just bear with me, okay? His name is Mark Irwin. He also did cinematography for The Brood, Scanners, Videodrome, The Dead Zone, The Fly, apparently like almost everything Cronenberg did in the 80s. Class of 1999, RoboCop 2, D2 the Mighty Ducks, New Nightmare, Dumb and Dumber, Vampire in Brooklyn, Kingpin, Scream, There's Something About Mary, 10 Things I Hate About You, Road Trip, great Tom Green movie, Me, Myself, and Irene, Freddy Got Fingered, Osmosis Jones, Old School, Malibu's Most Wanted, Scary Movie 3, The Ringer, and Grandma's Boy. Like, jeez.
Must have got tired of horror because after Scream, it kind of just goes to the stupid comedies.
Yeah, a bunch of Jim Carrey's.
Honestly, like, did Freddy Got Fingered really need a cinematographer? Like who needs a cinematographer? A guy jacking off a horse?
Apparently this guy.
That's not it. No, you don't need that.
Mark Irwin, fucking Steve Irwin's cousin. Edited by Tom Fuehrman. I don't know how to say that. He also edited Tommyknockers and a slew of TV shows and series. Then we have also edited by Terry Stokes, who edited A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, Critters 3 through 4, Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century, and Xenon the Sequel. That took a turn. Good for you, Terry. Starring Kevin Dillon as Brian Flagg, the lesser known Dillon brother. Whose top billed credit is for Poseidon as Lucky Larry. That should say a lot about this man's career.
Wasn't he in the show Entourage?
Maybe. But I just went with his top credit because I thought that was fucking hilarious.
Fair.
Then we have my girl Shawnee Smith as Meg Penny, who is most famous for her role as Amanda Young in the Saw franchise. Which we will be seeing her next week in Saw X. Me and Gabby just ran through all of the Saw movies. I know. I was like, oh, twist my arm. I didn't just watch those already in April. Then we have Donovan Leach Jr. as Paul Taylor. He was also in a movie called Glory as Captain Charles Fessenden Morse.
Glory, the one with Matthew Broderick in...
I'm going to say
Denzel?
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's that true story movie.
Then we have Jeffrey DeMunn as Sheriff Herb Geller, who was also in The Mist as Dan Miller, and also the cinematic masterpiece that is Rocket Man from 1997 as Paul Wick.
Yep.
If you haven't heard of Rocket Man, not the fucking Elton John one. I'm talking about the original Rocket Man with fucking Harlan Williams. It is a goddamn cinematic masterpiece. It is so amazing. It is so fucking goofy. And then we have Candy Clark as Fran Hewitt, who was also in American Graffiti as Debbie. This movie fucking bombed hardcore.
Yeah, it did.
Estimated budget of $19 million and only grossed $8.2 million. Fucking how? This movie's so good. I don't know how this bombed. I really don't. I mean, it didn't even make half of its fucking budget. Like, damn.
I mean, if you look at some of the things it came out with, like...
we're about to find out, right?
Yeah. I understand.
I mean, I can kind of understand, but it's not like anything that I'm about to say is like, oh, these movies are amazing.
You bite your tongue on Die Hard.
Okay, there's one. Okay, yeah.
Mac and Me. You bite your tongue on Mac and Me, you son of a bitch.
The cinematic masterpiece that is Mac and Me. You can watch this on Amazon for $3.99 rental or buy the Shout Factory Blu-ray or the 4K that'll be released soon. Don't buy the Blu-ray, buy the 4K if you don't have it already. So movies that came out around the same time, we have Short Circuit.
I swear to God, you're the tired one.
Short Circuit 2, Phantasm 2, Die Hard, A Fish Called Wanda, Midnight Run, Big Top Pee Wee, Caddyshack 2, It Is the Year of Twos, Mac and Me, A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. I mean, like, not saying that there's not good movies in there, but it's not like any of those movies, like, made hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, Die Hard, obviously, definitely made the most, and there's other good movies, but it's just weird that that was the competition, and it fucking bombed.
It's weird. I mean,
even Pee Wee didn't make that much money. I looked at it. It only made like 15, well, I mean, 18
also,
million.
Also in the 80s, you know, it was, I guess, different. I don't know. Like, I mean, you had Nightmare on Elm Street 4, which, to be honest, people probably saw that more.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially on the heels of 3, because 3 is my favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I guess that could make sense.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you got Die Hard. You know, Fish Call 1, the Midnight Run, probably did really well. I mean, there are some pretty, I mean, Short Circuit 2 is, there's more kid-friendly movies out here.
Let's see. So, Die Hard, $28 million budget, grossed $141 million. So.
What does it say opening weekend?
Opening weekend?
Yeah, does it have that info on
there? Oh, yeah.
Opening weekend?
Opening weekend was, oh my God, $83 million.
Well, there you go. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Holy there you go.
Holy shit. That is crazy. Yep. That's a killer opening. I mean,
80s were the time for those type of movies, for like Die Hard and Bruce Willis.
So let's see. A Fish Called Wanda. Oh, wow. Yeah. $7.5 million budget. $62 million gross. All right. So
what about Mac and Me? I want to know Mac and Me.
Oh, my God. I'm going to be so disgusted if this movie made like an absorbent amount of money.
I mean, it's a kid's movie, so it probably did.
All right, Mac and Me. Let's see. Oh no, $13 million budget and grossed $6 million worldwide.
Yep.
Oh shit.
Oh, but also, if you think that, so we got Short Circuit 2, which is PG.
Yeah.
A Fish Called Wanda, I'm pretty sure was PG-13.
PG-13.
Big Top Pee Wee was probably PG. Mac and Me, PG or G. Caddyshack 2, PG. So you have a very more.
Yeah.
Not that Caddyshack 2 is a kid-friendly movie for some stupid reason. They made it PG, but they did.
And even Nightmare on Elm Street 4, a $13 million budget, grossed, you know, 49. So
Die Hard and Nightmare on Elm Street alone destroyed the box office.
And Fish Called Wanda apparently too. So boom. I guess that's why it bombed. But damn, I mean, it didn't even make half of its money back. It also barely made more than Mac and Me. It only made like $2 million.
Yeah, Mac and Me, boy.
Oh my God.
I remember watching that shit on VHS.
Oh my God. Specific horror moments, did you have one?
I believe so. I gotta check my notes. Hold please.
Oh my goodness. Mine was when they pull the sheet away from the bum and his lower half is just completely melted away, and then Paul gets attacked by the blob. That whole entire scene.
Oh yeah, my horror moment was fucking crazy. Paul gets consumed by blob.
Oh my God.
That was, because that's the first time we kind of saw like it in its entirety at first. And
yeah.
Like, holy shit. And she's just holding his arm and his
arm falls off.
So,
bye.
That was my horror moment.
Do you have a favorite kill?
There's honestly, so many. Every kill was every amazing. Kill
is,
but,
is worthy of favorite kill.
Boom.
Phone booth, the sink.
The
fucking,
phone booth was pretty fucking cool.
Phone booth
cool.
is fucking awesome.
For effect-wise, the sink was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'd have to say it's a tie between The Sink and The Phone Booth.
All right. Mine, so I had a completely different one. It's Scott's date because her face just gets like fucking sucked
in. Oh, yeah. That is pretty cool.
That was such a good one. My favorite character, obviously Meg, Shawnee Smith.
Yes.
Yeah. Lee's favorite character for me was Scott. He was a fucking dick.
Yes. I'm not a fan. That was the rapey football player. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. My favorite line is from Brian when all the men in, you know, the fucking hazmat suits show up. He says, the men from Glad are here showing us how to keep our leftovers fresh. And he's referring to Gladware, like the Tupperware.
So I have two, but it's like a one after another because it coincides.
Okay.
So it's when they're at the pharmacist and the football player, you know.
It's Scott. Scott, okay. Scott's the rapey one.
Yeah. So he's getting the condoms or whatever, and he's talking to the priest, and then the guy's just like ribbed or whatever. And then he's like, yeah, it's actually for my friend. And then literally the next scene, he's picking Shawnee Smith up, and then the dad just like, I want to meet my dad. And he puts up the paper, and all he says is ribbed. Dead. I was dead. I forgot about that. That was classic.
IMDb summary, a deadly entity from space crash lands near a small town and begins consuming everyone in its path. Panic ensues as shady government scientists try to contain the horrific creature. Boy, that explains this movie perfectly. I think what's so effective about this movie, obviously, is the practical effects. They are fucking glorious in this movie.
I mean, yeah, out of the $19 million budget, $9 million of that
was effects. Which is great. And you can, I mean, yes, it's not perfect. You can tell that there's some...
Pretty much when you see the blob like move like a human being is when you can tell it's not real.
Yeah, you can tell it's, you know, a person superimposed on like, you know, a smaller set.
More so during the at like the climactic sewer scene, you can tell more of the CGI-ish part of the special effects.
That whole scene too is seriously like one of my favorite scenes when Shawnee Smith, so you got Meg and her little brother Kevin trapped down there in the sewers after she rescues him from the theater. And I honestly love how they killed a kid. I love when movies kill kids. It sounds horrible, I know, but it's like that usually doesn't get touched a lot. So if a movie goes to that level of just a kid death, I'm like, props, dude, because most people are scared to do that. And they don't really even show it, but, you know, what's his name? Eddie. He gets like sucked under the water and then he pops back up and he's all goopy.
My favorite, and this is going to sound horrible, but like when I explain it, it'll make more sense. But my favorite kid kill on screen is from John Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13. And the reason why is because after he shot that and he premiered, like he showed it to the production company, they're like, everything's good, but you gotta take out the kid getting shot.
And he was like, fuck you.
He literally, no, he said, okay. And he edited it back in without anybody knowing. So when it premiered at an actual theater worldwide, they noticed it was in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, he basically did say fuck you. Fuck I was like, you. Yep.
Yeah, that was.
So for that reason, why that's my favorite, like, kid getting killed on screen, only because John Carpenter's like, actually, this needs to be in here because it actually makes more sense than not having it in there, and not because I'm killing the kid. Because
that one was shocking.
Yeah.
I saw that for the first time, like, I don't know, probably last year, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, we watched it together.
Did we?
Well, we virtualed it.
Oh, that's so technically right. When I had COVID.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I was just like, oh my.
Yeah. And like you showed it right in the head.
Yeah, that was, that's a lot. But yeah, they don't shy away from that in this movie. And I'm not saying I'm like, yeah, kill kids. It's something that you don't see a lot in horror movies. That's why It Chapter 2, I was like, God damn, they're fucking just gooshing kids left and right. It's just something that you don't typically see, and I think it takes balls to do that because people are just like afraid to do that.
Yeah, it's a big taboo in movies to show a kid die on screen. Like like a lot of times if you hear about a kid death or whatever, like you'll see the like right before their death, and then the next scene somebody finding out that their kid died or whatever. Which I mean, that's super effective, also of course. Yeah. Like it gets the emotional of it all, but like,
just show me.
Yeah, there's nothing like showing a kid die on screen.
But yeah, that scene in the sewer, I think, is so effective because this whole time you've kind of seen the blob coming or seen, you know, something. And when they're in the water in the sewers, you don't know where the fuck that thing is. So I think it's very effective because it really amps up the who's going to die. Like, is Meg going to die? Is Kevin going to die? Is Eddie going to die? Spoiler
alert.
Are they all going to die? And Kevin manages to escape through like a little grate, but you know, Shawnee Smith can't fit through that. So she tries to find another way. And then who comes to save the day? But Brian and fucking Kevin Dillon's just atrociously like good hair. I don't know. It's like so bad. It's good. I don't know. It's
gorgeous.
It's like, is it clearly a wig? I don't know. I can't tell if it's a wig or not. It's so weird.
It's the 80s. I'm going to go with no.
I'm going to go with no. That was probably all him.
Yeah. I mean, it's the 80s. I mean, that was a hairstyle then.
Yeah, it was.
And what I really thought was cool about him, you know, saving the day, like, or Shawnee Smith, I mean, his character is like, it's like, you know, he's considered this troubled kid, this cast out. But at the end of the day, he's the unsung hero.
Yeah.
And like, it kind of gives a silver lining of don't judge a book by its cover without actually saying don't judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, he's the grungy kind of.
Yeah, he looks like the misfit of them all, which is fine.
And he's
like,
got a motorcycle.
Yeah, he does. They got motorcycles.
They got motorcycles. And what was he trying to do in the beginning? Evil Knievel that shit? Because he's like backs it up, and he's like going to jump over the. And then his bike completely
fucking
failed.
Dude, that is actually my favorite scene of the whole movie. It's more on the technical side, but like when he finally does that stunt at the end of it, and like when they get the shot, like the shot of the truck falling in the helicopter, and that was all like one shot, which was not in the script. It was by accident.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, that was a by accident scene, and they left it in there because that's exactly what they were trying to go for, and they didn't have to do any editing. They got that in one shot.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That's probably like my favorite scene on the technical side of that, because for that type of movie to get all of that in like a scene like that, I mean, it wasn't very like, you know, Hollywood and showy. It felt more real, like if that happened in real life.
You're talking about the end when the yes. blob tips over that truck?
No. When he goes to do that jump again, and when he jumps again, that you see the helicopter in the air and that other truck just falls. So remember in the beginning what you were talking about, he tries to jump that. So he does it again at the end of the movie.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, man. Well, he does. And it's awesome. But anyway, so he does it. It's a real quick thing. But in that shot, in the script, it was supposed to be what it was, like it was, obviously. But like, they weren't expecting to get it all in one shot. They were expecting to do multiple shot, like different takes, but they got everything they needed in one shot.
Hmm.
And it shows, the stuntman on the bike jumping it. And as he's jumping it, you see the truck that was chasing him flip over because they got in the edge, and then the helicopter up in the sky that was chasing him all in one shot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I must have been on another planet for that, because I definitely don't remember that.
Unbelievable.
Oh, here we go. I see it now. I'm watching it. Thank you, YouTube, for just having this scene. Oh, there we go. Okay. Yeah. I think I was grabbing a soda. Oh, yeah, there it is. Goosh!
See, it's all in one scene. They didn't have to do any editing to get it all outside. Like, it's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
That type of movie to do, for like, you know, the 80s to do that, and to be just to get it all by luck in one shot. It's
right.
Actually part of trivia, I think, on there that probably. They say it.
Yeah, you gotta love that shit. We did this by accident. Whoops.
I mean, even though it was in the script, like, now we don't have to do extra takes. Save some money. Cool.
Yeah, I guarantee that saved a lot of money.
Yeah, it's not like they made any.
So it's funny, because that is kind of funny, because when he does it at the beginning, you're like, what are you doing there, guy? And then his motorcycle breaks. I love the bum. It's just like, yeah, and he pours his beer out. I'm like, all right, crazy man. Right? He did have a pretty nice shanty in the woods, though. He had, like, that fucking covered in hubcaps and shit, and his little dog was out there. Yeah, but he's actually the first one to find the blob. And I don't know about you, but if I was a homeless man living my good life in the woods with a nice little shack and a dog, I wouldn't be poking around in a meteorite. I'd be like, that's weird. I'm going to go the other way.
Well,
I'm just saying. I don't know.
I mean, who knows how long he's been out there? And it's not like there's any other really signs of life just chilling in the fucking woods. So he probably was like, ooh, another friend. Or he's like, you know, curiosity killed the cat, and he only had the dog, so obviously the cat's already dead.
Right? No, the cat was in the beginning of the movie, walking around town. Yeah, he's like, fuck this guy, I'm leaving.
Yeah, so.
I also just want to live in a world where that town was completely vacant except for that cat, because in the beginning, you're like, is this a ghost town? What the fuck? And then it cuts to them at like a football game. You're like, oh, I guess the whole town is there.
I mean, it's a small town. It makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah. But I love that the cat's just wandering around. I was like, that would be a thing that happened. A cat would just be running the town. Probably a mayor. What was
mayor
I going to say?
Kitten Caboodle.
Yes, give him a little hat and a little tie. I actually follow a cat on TikTok who has a little tie, and it's the cutest
little goddamn thing.
Bow tie. His name's Walter the cat.
Walter. That's great.
So yeah, I really like the practical effects in this movie, and the blob, as it's named, gets onto the bum, and I really wish that Brian wouldn't have stopped the bum from cutting his hand off, because I was like, oh, this is going to be a really cool practical effect. And then Brian's like, no, and then the bum runs away. I was like, damn it. But you do get a great payoff when his body is just completely melted. That's why my horror moment, the first time I saw that, I was like, oh, I was not expecting that. I figured the blob would just be kind of like around him.
I wasn't really expecting it to be so gory. Seriously. In that way. Not that it was like over the top gory, like I could handle it, but like,
this is really good.
for this type of movie, like, I wasn't really expecting that kind of like, I had the word. I just wasn't expecting it.
No, yeah. I didn't expect it to be as like melty and goopy as it was.
I expected most of the kills to probably be off screen because of the effects, but they're like, fuck it, we're going to go for it and make no money.
They show, yeah, right. They really did. They showcase so many. I mean, there's so many good kills. You have the sink kill where that guy gets sucked into the sink, like head first, blood everywhere. And then you have there's actually a really cool scene that I really enjoy in the phone booth when that lady's trying to call the sheriff.
Oh, the phone booth scene was really cool.
So cool. So it's after the blob attacks the guy in the sink at the diner, and Shawnee Smith's character, Kevin Dillon, they run out, and the waitress runs out to the phone booth, but it's too late for her because the blob just like starts like gooping down the sides of it and encompasses the entire phone booth, and then eventually just like crushes her to pieces, which is great. But there's a really cool scene where she's trying to get a hold of the sheriff, whose name is Herb, and it's played by Jeffrey DeMunn, and she's trying to call him, and she turns around, and you see his head like floating up the blob's like gelatinous flesh, and his eyes are moving, and she's like, "Herb, oh my god!" And then the fucking whole phone booth just crushes into oblivion. So effective, so good. But you're right; I didn't really expect it to be as like graphic as it is.
Yeah, because it's not like it was a person doing any killing; it was a
Gelatinous fucking goop.
So usually we just see them get consumed and call it a day, but this we actually saw like in detail.
Yeah, you really saw in detail. And even at the end when the blob is running rampant through the streets and just like picking people up.
That was such a
satisfying conclusion.
Good scene.
I have to say, though, I put this in my notes. I was like, I find it extremely convenient that the town just had a snow
machine.
Like, what is this, just laying around? Like, Brian goes to find it, and he blasts the kid, because the blob doesn't like the cold, and they find that out when they hide in the freezer, and the blob's like, ooh, it retracts, because it's like, I don't like the cold. So, you know, flamethrowers don't work on this fucker. Bullets don't work on this thing. Shawnee Smith is able to kind of, like, subdue it with a fire extinguisher, because that's, you know, it's, like, cold. So it's pretty cool how he just goes and steals I think it was that guy's moss, I think.
The mechanics.
I guess that was just his snowmaker for whatever reason. So yeah, I thought that was funny. Just that's convenient to just have laying around. And he ends up, and it's funny because you think that, oh, he's going to come save the day and blast this thing with snow. But the blob actually like flips the car over, and the tank that has all the snow in there falls off. And fucking Meg, Shawnee Smith's character, actually comes to save the day. Almost eats shit, though.
Yes.
She's so close to eating shit.
Dude, that was such God. When I was rewatching, I'm like, oh, yeah, epic. No.
Yeah. She goes to set this bomb because you learn that the biologists that are there, which, you know, they come out of nowhere, and they're like, why are you guys here? They're like, we're here to help. Like, how did you even know about this? Yeah. There's a whole like government conspiracy about how the bacteria, they like did a bacteria test for like something to do with Russia, and it turns out that the blob is actually their like unintentional creation, and they're trying to like subdue it.
It's like the mist all over again.
Yeah, yeah. And Brian even hears them say, like, oh, the civilians are expendable. Like, what the fuck? This is, you fucking fix this. And then that guy eats shit too, which is great. Meadows. He gets dragged into the fucking sewers by the blob. But what was I talking about right before that?
Her
sequel. Oh, saving the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she ends up stealing some sort of explosive from the biologist, and it's a great idea. She draws the blob away from Brian, who's in the truck with a gun, and then, you know, blob starts coming towards her, and then she puts the explosive on the tank to, you know, hopefully neutralize it. Dude, the way she fell made me laugh out loud.
I wonder if that was like real and they just kept it because it looked so like it looked so fluid.
Yeah, it looked so authentic fluid. Because she goes to jump off the tank and she catches her foot on something and just whack, like it.
Yeah,
dude, she smacked the fuck out of that.
She definitely ate shit.
And I don't know. I'm assuming it was probably a stunt double. I hope it was. If it was, like, I would love to ask Johnny Smith, like, hey, did you, was that intentional? Did you actually smack the fuck out of yourself?
I mean, even if you did, like I'm pretty sure the tank wasn't, like, actual liquid tank.
Probably not. I would hope it would be some sort of forgiving material.
If anything, like, it was green screen. It was just, like she was just on something plastic or whatever that's shaped like that. And they screen screened it in there.
I assume it wasn't made of metal, but I like to think it was the 80s.
Really, but then again, if she really ate shit, it's not like it was planned.
No, yeah. So she gets caught on that, and I'm like, oh God, I can't remember. I've only seen this once. Does she get exploded in? But no, Brian comes and saves her. So it's like both of them saved the day because she saved him, and then he saved her, and then they saved the town together. So, and when the blob like explodes, it turns into these like fucking crystals or something. Yeah, so that was really cool. And I even love it the end because there's throughout this entire movie, there's this reverend or priest or whatever, the guy that Scott and Paul run into, getting condoms, which was great. That whole scene fucking made me laugh. And eventually, at one point, you see those crystals earlier in the film, and the priest takes them and puts them in like this jar. And at the end of the movie, he's seen doing a sermon in the fucking tent, and he's like, the Lord will tell me when the time has come for like, whatever, and he has the little glass container, but it's not crystals anymore. It's like a little miniature blob, and I was like, this guy's gonna cause the end of the world. He's gonna bring the rapture upon the entire world, this fucking crazy priest. But yeah, I just think this movie, I'm glad that it's not longer than an hour and 35. I feel like this was like the perfect runtime because you have a good introduction, you're introduced to all the characters pretty quickly, the action gets started I'd say like 15 minutes in when the bum gets attacked, and then they go to the hospital, and then from there it literally is like a snowball. The blob gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually just busts through. That's a great scene too, when the blob bursts through the asphalt in the sewer and just like yeets all these people off and just starts going rampant through the streets. I mean, this movie is just a great time. I wish I had seen it earlier in life so I could have been enjoying it for many more years, but sadly, I discovered it like when I bought the Scream Factory release, and then I double dipped on the 4K because I'm excited. But I don't know. What do you think? Overall thoughts on this bad boy?
It's good.
It's good. I enjoy it. I just didn't know if you had any like special fun moments that
I actually liked it more this time than the last. Up my rating.
Oh, okay. All right. I like that. I think mine stayed the same, but I was hooked from it from the beginning. It's nice to see Shawnee Smith in something that's not Saw, because that's like the only thing I've ever seen her in.
You know, it's funny because the first time I ever saw Shawnee Smith was on the show Becker with Ted Danson.
Oh, really?
She was his assistant, and she was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, like I
so
mean,
I saw her in a comedy TV show before I ever saw her in movies.
Oh, that's fun. Okay. Yeah, I had only ever seen her in Saw. And of course, then I went and saw The Blob. I mean, it's not like she's only done Saw. She's got like 72 credits. I just haven't seen anything else that she's done.
Yeah, she was really funny as Becker's assistant.
Oh, she's in The Grudge 3. Oh boy.
I mean, so. a movie we're not going to watch.
Yeah.
Wait, there's a third Grudge?
Apparently so. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, what the fuck?
She's also in Armageddon as Redhead.
Oh shit, yes she is. Ha!
Have
you seen Armageddon?
Years ago.
No, I didn't want to just like spoil anything.
No, you're good.
So there's a scene before they all go to the spaceship, and Steve Buscemi's kind of a sex addict, so he's at a strip club, and she's one of the people dancing on him.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. She's also in The Stand, the TV miniseries. She's in The Stand. I forgot about that.
But yeah, she's very like I didn't even think about that till now. But yeah, she's definitely that redhead in Armageddon for sure.
A redhead Shawnee Smith. Yeah, we'll be seeing Shawnee Smith next weekend in Saw X. I am so like fucking excited for that movie. I saw someone post on Facebook. They were like, Saw X, unnecessary sequel. I was like, you fucking shut your mouth. No.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing, but I'm also gonna wait till I see it to first be like, yeah, this wasn't necessary.
I mean, they were all unnecessary after like four, honestly. The first four, I'm like, all right, but like after that, I'm like, okay.
I mean, this one just seems like it's just gonna bridge a gap between one and two because.
Yeah, how did you go from a trap with two people to a trap with like seven people?
I meant more with his disease.
Oh, true.
I mean we got a glimpse of it in the first one, obviously, with little backstory, but that's as far as that went. And then all of a sudden in the second one, he's worse for wear, and you're like, whoa, that was a huge jump from that to that. Like,
yeah.
So we're gonna. It seems like it's just gonna be a bridge the gap for everything, because also with Amanda, it's gonna probably bridge the gap there with flashbacks, and I mean, like the flashbacks that we get throughout the series, it's probably just literally a bridge the gap movie, which is fine. Like, am I gonna complain about it? No, but like, can it be? It has the potential to suck so much ass.
Yeah, but this is the first one that we're getting since like Seven. That's like, I know he was in Jigsaw, but like, this is like the first one kind of like. I feel like, you know, Kevin Grudert's directing. We've got the original producers. Like, I'm pretty hopeful.
This is the first one we're getting that's part of the original story.
I'm so excited.
So essentially, I'm going to count this one as 8.
Yeah.
Even, you know, or sorry, I'll count 7 as 8, and this one be 2.
I was going to say, I'm going to count this one as 1.5.
Like 1.5.
Let's see here. Let's get to the post-review stuff. I've got some taglines for you. Man is no longer the supreme being on this planet. Scream now while there's still room to breathe. Terror has no shape. That's my favorite.
I like the scream now while there's still room to breathe, because once you get consumed by him, you can't really
breathe.
Yeah,
you're going to get suffocated to death. If it had a mind, you could reason with it. If it had a face, you could look it in the eye. And if it had a body, you could shoot it. That is entirely too fucking long.
That's poetic.
I think that was a Garth. That was a haiku. God bless your face. The partially dissolved but still alive soldier was performed by stuntman Noble Craig, a triple amputee who lost both his legs, arm, and an eye while serving in the Vietnam War. Oh, yeah, here you go. Yeah, so the big stunt featuring Brian jumping the ravine on his motorcycle while a helicopter flies overhead and a truck crashes was all captured in camera with all of those elements actually in the shot.
Yep.
Both tires blew out on the motorcycle when it landed, and the stunt double held the bike up with his upper body strength and his fucking feet, according to Chuck Russell.
Yeah, it's kind of, that's. I would have probably said the same thing. Like, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome. This was released nearly 30 years after the original version of The Blob and had an estimated budget of almost 80 times the original. We went over that one already. $19 million budget, $9 million towards effects. The use of Triumph motorcycles could be a nod to Steve McQueen, the original star of The Blob from 1958. McQueen owned several Triumphs and rode them on and off screen. A lot of the blob, slime, slash juice was made out of methacol, which is both unbelievably slippery and a thickening agent, a thickening ingredient for milkshakes.
Oh.
Saw Shawnee Smith's role as Meg would later earn her the job as Amanda Young in the Saw 2004 franchise, because James Wan and Lee Whannell were fans of this film. And lastly, co-writer and director Chuck Russell and co-writer Frank Darabont first connected in the early 80s when they worked together on the underappreciated Hell Night. Darabont was a production assistant, and Russell was a producer. Director cameo Chuck Russell as the theater patron in the second row, left of center during the wide shot of the theater audience reacting to an on-screen fright.
Nice.
Goofs. When Meg and the two boys are running to leave the theater in front of the movie, the boy in yellow is laughing when he should be terrified. That was fun. When Candy Clark is bringing the dishes back into the diner after trying to unclog the sink, she sees the cook being dragged into the sink. The crew can be seen reflected in the swing door's window, which I noticed as well. When Meg and the two boys are running to leave the theater, again, this is another thing. You can see the Steadicam operator's shadow on the door when they go by the projector. Or while they shadow on the door when they go through while the projector is flashing. And when Dylan's character goes out from the police station, the shadow of the camera is clearly seen. 1 minute, 37. Rated 6.6 out of 10 on IMDb, 3.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd. This has plus a 54%, I'm going to say, tomato meter, and a 57% audience score. I give this a 4.5 out of 5.
I had it at a 4, and I jumped it to a 4.
Oh, shit. You know what that means. Frightmare certified. Slap. Killing it. Similar movies according to Letterboxd. We have The Blob, 1958. No shock there. Slither. Freddy vs. Jason for some reason. Feast and The Thing.
Freddy vs. Jason is the oddest.
It really is.
Everything else makes more sense. That's Freddy vs. Jason wasn't a body horror. Except for maybe one scene to where you kind of see Freddy inside of a body room.
Yeah, a random choice.
Yeah, out of all of those, that's random.
Similar movies according to IMDb, The Blob, 1958, Creepshow, Return of the Living Dead, Reanimator, and Fright Night. Let's do some funny reviews. I've got some pretty good ones. I have 3 here, good sir.
I also have 3.
Oh, shit. I'll kick it over to you. Right, what do you
got? So this one's 5 stars.
Oh.
So the blob kills a date rapist and someone talking during a movie. This is the most satisfying movie of all time. It's pretty legit.
All right. I got 3.5 from Morgan. Kind of on the same wavelength of what you just said. That's what should happen anytime a man gropes a woman without her consent. The blob is just enacting karma. Facts.
Yep. All right. My next one is 3.5 stars. David Cronenberg jacks off to this.
Oh my God.
I thought that was beautiful.
This is his wet dream.
That was so good.
4 stars from Charlie on Letterboxd. I, for one, welcome our new gelatinous overlord.
This one's literally for both of us because we can agree. 5 stars. Sorry, but the blob snatching up the child makes this a full 5-star film.
Oh my God, we have so many that are on the same wavelength. 3.5 stars from Chloe on Letterboxd. I love when horror movies kill kids in awesome ways. Oh my God.
That's all I got.
I love it. All right, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and the Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast. Our email is stayspooky@outlook.com. You can find me on Letterboxd personally at Dr. Proctor. You are Slafferman. That'll do it for regular episodes this month. Our bonus episode will be me and Corey doing a movie about a doll, and it's not dolls. We already did dolls, so we have 2 movies in the same vein this month from the late 2000s. Until then, stay tuned and
stay spooky.
Nice.